because I did that thing where I was like that girl who just forgets all her friends as soon as she gets a boyfriend.
Right.
And really, yeah. And no, I think it was, no. I've got to hold on, same as the radio show, hold on to this because this is like my dream and I don't want it to be taken away from me. Welcome to another episode of Secrets in the City. My name is Dr. Catherine Isco, and I'm your proud host for this episode. If you are hearing something in the background, that is what I call my dog's porn show, because it is now close to 6 p.m., and this is when they decide to be active. How awesome. Thanks. Nevertheless, I have a wonderful, wonderful guest for y'all today. So we were just talking about how we met Carmen.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. And it was many years ago. You were emceeing an event and I was doing a talk. I don't know if you remember, but my slides weren't working. Mm. And there was something wrong with the mic. And I just was in one of those kind of moods that I was going to wing it.
Yeah.
And I was just holding myself. And I remember there was someone in the audience saying, I've never seen this side of you. And I was looking at you. You were so professional. I'm like, oh, I hope one day I can be just like her.
Really?
Nevertheless, welcome to Secrets in the City. I'm going to let you do the honors of introducing yourself. I always say, if I were a six-year-old, tell me, what do you do?
Oh, thanks, Dr. Kat. And first I'll say that I remember that day when you were on stage and I was sitting there as the MC in the audience looking at you thinking I'd like to be her when I grow up, you know. So isn't it funny how we kind of have
totally
no idea what's going on inside someone's head. So
totally
get to the bottom of that soon.
Yes.
To introduce myself, my name's Carmen. I'm a television and radio presenter with 20 years experience in the commercial media. These days I'm a freelancer because I've leaned into modern media training. And I call it modern media training because I'm talking about not just TV and radio skills. I'm also talking about the skills we need for the digital media in this modern age and how whether you're in business or you're a personal brand, you're an entrepreneur, you need to be what I call a modern media performer. And included in that is things like confidence on camera, being able to front up and do a podcast just like this, engage the lens of the camera if you're, you know, being filmed at the same time, or be ready for that big day when Oprah calls and puts you on a show.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Oprah. Oh my God, you said the magic word. Isn't it funny though? Would you say like 20 years ago, you know, there was people in front of the camera were not that many, but nowadays it could literally be anyone, because whether you're a lawyer who wants to promote their company to literally anyone, even a school teacher.
Yeah.
You know, to show the world what they're doing in the classroom, everyone needs those skills. So my question is, why do people not have confidence on camera? Because I love popping in front of the camera. Can you tell?
This doesn't seem like a you problem, but you're right. Like even say 10 years ago when I met this chiropractor who said to me, hey, I see you do some TV presenting. Can you teach me to do that? I even said to him, why would you, a chiropractor, need to do that? You know, and he was the one who said to me, oh, but I need to be able to educate my patients and I want them to feel like I'm there with them even if I'm not, you know, even if I don't have them in my treatment room. And so, you know, it wasn't apparent to me even from within the media then that everybody else needed those skills. I soon figured that out. And I guess the answer to why we don't feel confident on camera is a lot to do with us, TV presenters, news presenters in particular. And if you've grown up watching people like us on TV and radio, where we bring a lot of perfection to it. And I'm not the big noting kind of perfection. I'm talking about working from scripts and being very regimented in our production style. There's a generation of us who maybe are north of 40 who are going, I grew up watching this very rigid style on camera, on TV shows, on the news, and I feel like I have to bring that perfection to it. The reality is, in the digital media, we don't want to see that. We want to actually see the real person shine through.
And my mind is just blown. I'm speechless right now because I've actually never made that connection, because every time, yes, I'm confident on camera, but whenever I play back the videos, I'm like, oh, but that didn't make sense, or I didn't make the connection and I wasn't looking the right way. And it's funny, whenever I post videos that I only do one take Charlie and just all the screw-ups, everyone likes it so much better.
Yeah, the same thing used to happen to me on radio. And I think this is why my confidence on camera coaching has worked for so many people, is I bring radio station or radio persona sensibilities to on-camera presentation, right? Yes, I've worked on TV. Yes, I've worked in newsrooms. But at radio, that was where we really do have to be our most authentic selves, right? I was on a breakfast radio show, always worked on breakfast radio shows. And typically they're a 3.5 hour show, 5 times a week. There is just no time to be perfect all the time, right?
Yes.
And so what I noticed is when I got to the big cap city job here in Perth, which isn't really the big cap city, but still, for me it was. What I noticed is that they weren't clipping up the bits that I used to clip up when I was producing myself, right? Back in the country, I'd go, oh, I nailed that line. Mm-hmm. And my voice sounded really deep and authoritative there, and I'm going to pull that bit out and I'm going to use that in the promo. No, the promos for my show here in Perth on radio were always the things that I kind of instinctively was embarrassed of. You know, like, oh, that's not the me I want people to see, but it was the me that people actually loved.
Yes.
And that engaged the audience and really was like lifting a curtain and saying, hey, this is the real Carmen. And slowly but surely, I got comfortable with that.
Would you say it's because people don't trust the people that don't seem real?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like a slimy salesman kind of thing, would you say?
Yeah, we've also got a really keen BS filter as consumers, as viewers now. You know, on TV, we didn't need that BS filter because we're like, all right, just tell me the story. Give me the facts, right, if you're talking news. But now with the digital media, we are seeing so many creators out there. Everyone's got a platform. Everyone's walking around with a TV station in their pocket, right? Uh-huh. And if someone's bunging it on, we're just not buying it. We're not buying what they're selling, are we? Yes. And so to build trust, you've really got to let us see the real thing. And if you're going to look at AI, look at ChatGPT. Mm. If you go and rely on AI, your audience will be able to tell. It can serve you to help inspire a few things, but as audience members, we're very savvy these days and we will not believe it unless it really comes from a place of your most natural self.
We're going to get back to all this. Perhaps selfishly, I want to hear all the tips of the trade because I'm just going to use them myself, but this is about secrets. It's about stories. So let's dive into the secrets. Mm. But I'm sure it's going to somehow dovetail into everything that you do today, because that's what I notice a lot about these secrets, is that the secret that people reveal is generally something that has fueled their purpose and drive. Mm. Inevitably, actually, I've never really connected one that hasn't. So without further ado, Carmen, which secret did you choose?
I chose the secret that I really struggle to trust even my friends, even my partner. I feel really insecure around the closest people in my life.
Do you feel the same about strangers?
No. Sometimes I probably underestimate strangers and feel like I can pull the wool over their eyes, maybe. Maybe I feel like I can put a confident front on, and because that's worked for me in the past. But really around those people who know the deepest me, it's a bit like, whoa, you know, can I really trust that they're still going to like me because they've seen it all?
Right. How long have you felt this way?
Well, probably forever, but I haven't been aware of it until much more recently.
Wow. And what really made it, I guess, come alive for you?
I would say, looking back, it was after I got quite sick. And also after the radio show that I was telling you about, the big cap city one here in Perth, came to an abrupt end. So that show was axed, thus confirming my belief that I'd held the whole time I was there. I was there for 7 years and I was like, this show will not end on my terms. It'll end when they say you're gone. And that was because
I just wanted it so badly, that radio job. You know, I said I'm sort of this radio person through and through. I went to radio school when I was 20 and just was working towards Cap City Breakfast. Cap City, that's what we want, that's what we want. And so once I got it, I was just clinging to it so hard and just really hard on myself and trying to ram myself into this kind of ideal of what I thought a brekkie show host needed to be, that there's no way I would have walked away from it, even when it did start to really drastically impact on my personal values and I started to feel out of alignment with it. When I was getting sick, you know, I was really getting run down, and I ended up shortly after the show came to an end being diagnosed with a really rare autoimmune illness. I already had a couple of autoimmune diagnoses. I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is pretty common. You might have a lot of people who go, yeah, I've got thyroid issues, who are watching or listening right now. After that, I was lucky enough to experience premature ovarian failure, or what's otherwise known as early menopause, probably sometime in my 20s. It was missed. And while I was so busy thrashing myself at work, I also had a misdiagnosed illness, which is called Addison's disease. And Addison's disease is adrenal insufficiency. So it's another autoimmune response. And basically, my adrenal glands had stopped providing me with the fight or flight things, right? So your adrenals give you cortisone and they give you adrenaline, one to pump you up and one to calm you back down. Yeah. And I can't help but think some of this kind of really harsh way that I was treating myself physically and emotionally in order to succeed at work. Right. And because I, you know, I probably didn't trust myself back then that I'd be good enough, you know, and I just had to prove myself.
Mm.
Yeah. I seem to have forgotten the question, but yeah.
No. It was all relevant because we were talking about, yeah, the secrets and so forth. And when you were talking, I was just, whenever you're listening, you can't help but obviously put yourself in someone's shoes.
Yeah.
And how can I ask, how old were you during like this period when you started and when you were at the peak of the stress?
So 35 through to 37.
Okay.
And the diagnosis of Addison's disease happened, 38. And it had been missed about 12 months before. I Dr. Googled it, walked into my GP and said, hey, there's this thing called Addison's disease. And that doctor at the time said, oh, it's so rare. There's very little chance you've got that. Didn't even test for it. And so it wasn't until I became quite acute, really, really sick, that it was diagnosed. And that led to, you know, a lot of distrust in everyone around me. And I kind of said, hey, F you to the medical fraternity. And probably what was a misguided attempt, not probably, it was my attempt to get pregnant and get healthy. I kind of like just went all full natural, ignored all my medical advice, and wound up at Royal Perth ICU after having two seizures, one in which I fell off the hospital bed in ED, bumped my head, bit my tongue. My poor husband had to witness all of that happening. Yeah, and then, it was pretty shit, Kat. It was pretty shit.
Oh, my God.
I don't remember that, thankfully. And I think for me, when I woke up, I kind of just went, yeah, great, let's just get on with life. I literally started a new radio show a week after coming out of hospital. I was in my hospital bed having been moved out of ICU, where I took a phone from another radio station who wanted me to do a new show. You were on that show only a few years later. But, you know, this is it. To me back then, it was just unimaginable that I could say, I think I need a beat, to a radio employer. I said, oh, okay. It's funny, I am in hospital, but I really want this job. So, yes, I'll take it, because my belief was that no one was going to want me if I didn't take that job, or they wouldn't want me again if I didn't take it now.
Gotcha.
And to be honest, when it comes to the broadcast media, I don't know whether that belief is gone yet. I think that for a large part, the media is quite cutthroat, and you've always got that fear that it just won't be there anymore.
Yeah.
But the best thing is that my business and my product, my modern media training, and the things that I can do as a conference speaker and as an educator, as a workshop presenter, and working with corporates and an online course creator, gives me so much more value, you know, and that feels so much more in alignment because it's mine, and it really helps me validate my worth through the value that I can bring to other people. And I had no idea how rewarding it would be. It's really great.
Isn't it funny how sometimes life throws you massive curveballs? I mean, that's an understatement in your case, but it actually provided you such a beautiful, no, I don't want to say ending, but direction for you.
Yeah.
But the trusting, it's almost like you were so passionate about being on radio. You obviously put in a lot of effort and dedication and time and probably money as well to bring up that talent in you. Then you got the gig.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you trusted in this whole radio world to protect you in a way and to say, hey, you put in all this effort and we trust you enough to hire you, so you're going to receive that trust back from us.
Oh, Kat, that's so, oh my God, I hadn't even thought about it that way, but you're so right.
Really? Yeah,
because everything I've ever been taught is that if you demonstrate that you're keen and if you want to do it and you show up and you work, and I moved all over the country for radio, you know, like radio and I don't know, sometimes I've described my relationship with radio like this toxic partner, like a bad boyfriend, you know, but then other times I just am still so in love with it. You know, I'm an avid listener. And I love the audible medium because you can create so much more of an intimate connection. And this is one of the reasons why I didn't really gel so much with news broadcasting. So I was a newsreader on radio and I was keen. I kind of was like, oh, I think I want to be a TV news reporter. But there's this kind of barrier put between the news reporter and even the newsreader on the telly and the viewer, because you need to maintain distance. You know, the story is more important. But my radio connections that I've made with audience members, to me, are so valuable. You know, there are people who've heard me on radio, you know, in country towns in Victoria, you know, the other side of the country from me now, who will still pop up on my Facebook and go like, wow, there you are, Carmen. I used to listen to you in Hamilton, and how's your dad going? Is he, you know, because I tell these, you know, random stories, and they're like, how's Naked Dave? And that's because I tell stories about dad taking off and having a swim naked in our backyard pool. You know, like so many little things people remember. And so, yeah, I still have great, great fondness for it. But the industry itself, it wasn't a good place for a girl with the trust issues I have to hang out. And I really buried that down and just got on with it because I loved it so much and I wanted it so much.
You put on the armor.
Yeah.
Because it sounds to me also that this was giving you all your self-esteem, almost like it gave you your identity in a way. And then all of a sudden that thing that gave you that feel-good identity just got taken away, and then the illness came.
Yeah.
And then you were meant to go to a medical doctor or medical profession that you were meant to trust.
Yeah.
Not only with all your heart, like literally with your life.
Mm.
And then that was a bit of a slap in the face as well. So no wonder.
Yeah, it was like I was the good girl, like everyone was telling me to be for a really long time, and I still got fucked over, if I'm honest. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry to swear.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Why do you think this is? Like, it's almost, God, there's a saying like, good people who do bad, and then there's bad people that do good, like that kind of thing. It's almost like you're this great person that thought that great people get great things, but sometimes it's like the nasty people that get ahead quicker.
Maybe.
If you know what I mean, especially in media and so forth, which is...
Yeah, that's true. There is an element of we'll manage a difficult talent because we know them, and we'll put up with it, you know, because it's sort of better the devil we know.
Yes.
So we'll get on with it. That certainly, I think, existed in the media. And I've worked on shows where I was a producer, you know, where I saw that happening behind the scenes for sure. But I really do wholeheartedly believe now, after quite the journey. You know, this show came to an end back in 2017. I got sick in 2018. So here we are sort of 5 years plus down the track. I think I've come to a place now where I really wholeheartedly believe you get put where you're meant to be to learn the thing you need to learn.
You don't have to tell me that because I'm living it right
now. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're 45. It took a while, but you can get there.
Yeah.
So have you ever had, prior to this, any trust issues, like even before the radio and so forth, or was it really just during that radio experience?
No, I think I was probably always a distrusting girlfriend. Yeah, always. Just never believed that this gorgeous man in my eyes would like me. You know, that's probably where that came from. You know, this, like, what's he doing with me? He must be a liar and a phony and a cheat.
And I'm going to say girlfriend, like, do you mean like when you were a teenager or?
Oh, it would have definitely kicked in from like 18. Yeah, for sure. Found it really hard to trust. Yeah.
And who was your boyfriend at the time? You don't even, you can make up a name if you want. You can just say John.
Numero uno.
Numero uno. So you were dating for a while and did you find out that you shouldn't trust him?
I never got the confirmation, you know, but that's the crappy thing is that I guess I was always kind of looking for it, you know, and there were certainly things that happened that looking back make me think as an adult woman. Oh, that's not cool. Like,
hey,
Carmen in her 40s would not put up with the crap that Carmen in her 20s put up with.
Okay. Yeah. So definitely molded your ability to trust people in relationships then.
Yeah.
From 18.
I would say so. Yeah.
That's young. I mean, from all the research, it shows that our, you know, our frontal brain isn't developed until we're 25. So we don't have that, you know, logic to say, is this guy good for us or not? And then it... mold who you are. I mean,
I think so. And you know what, even looking back, I know that, you know, now that I have a stepson who's that age, and I know that we can look from the outside in on what he's got going on, but I certainly know that you have to let the young people make their own decisions in that circumstance. And looking back, I know there were times with my dad and my mum, and they'd each sort of say, hey, you're only 18 19, you sure you want to? You know, he went off and worked. He went off and did his thing, left Perth, and I sort of sat there waiting for him a couple of times over. And I now look back on that and think, oh, they were some really important years. And I lost a lot of contact with some really close girlfriends through that time because I did that thing where it's like that girl who just forgets all her friends as soon as she gets a boyfriend. And really, and I think it was, I've got to hold on, same as the radio show, hold on to this because this is like my dream and I don't want it to be taken away from me. And I think if I'd probably stood up for myself a little bit more in, you know, in hindsight and said, hey, well, you know, you're going to go do your thing, I'm going to go do mine. Because when I did go do my own thing and take my first radio job, once we'd been together like 4 years, and I was 20, 21, 22, he didn't like it, you know, and tried to talk me out of it.
Right.
Yeah. So I think when it became something I wanted to do for myself, there probably became this belief that, well, if I'm going to go do things for myself, my loved ones aren't going to support me, you know.
Right.
I think.
I know that the equations add up.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, do you trust yourself?
Now I do. But certainly after I woke up, a couple of years after I woke up in the ICU that time, I said, I kind of woke up and just went for it. I didn't quite register. Ryan, my husband, he had a period of depression afterwards because I said, babe, you're probably in shock. Like, it sounds like what happened to me was pretty crazy. And I reckon you're probably in shock, you know, and I now know that he was. And I know now that I didn't deal with it until a couple of years later. And then it all came back to me and I went, whoa, I think I nearly died. I think I need to kind of think about this a bit more. I did go through a period of going, I don't know who to trust, I don't trust myself anymore, because I made that decision to say get stuff to the doctors.
Yes.
But now finally I'm learning to listen to my intuition and to go toward opportunities that feel genuinely aligned to me, and that brings me so much security.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I have a feeling like something's off now, I really do. I follow that. And I meditate on it. I do all these things that I would never have talked about on a blokey breakfast radio show 10 years ago. You know, I really spend time tapping into how I feel and how I feel about situations, and I give myself heaps of space to just lead life that's a far more aligned one to what it used to be. Whereas before I was probably like, I've got to do all the things, I'm going to say yes to everything, I'm going to really harshly judge anyone who doesn't work as hard as me.
Yes.
And and I thought that that meant I deserved all the success. But now I have far greater trust that if I do all the things that I need for me, I will show up better when I do show up, and I get better results, and I feel far more successful now than I was back then.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what does trust mean to you then? I mean, it sort of, you touched on like following your own instinct, but would you say it's that, or?
A sense of security.
Sense of, okay, interesting.
I think there's a certainty and a safety. And, you know, we'll often talk about how things don't feel safe to us.
If
they're out of alignment, or if you have this kind of limiting belief maybe that, and I think in the past I probably viewed big success as something not feeling safe for me. But now I'm really getting back to a place of, no, I can do those things. And I can, I think, yeah, there's a, well, this is so deep. This is so
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you said safety because how do you know whether you're just saying it's safety and like, or if it's just really uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Like what's the line between the two? Because I define confidence as, you know, confidere, to trust oneself, right?
But yes,
where I take it a step further is you trust yourself along the way, even though it doesn't work out, even though you might get hurt.
Yeah.
You still say, you know what, but I trust myself and I back myself.
Yeah.
Even though I got hurt, even though it didn't work out.
Yeah.
You know, you bounce back, resilience, blah, blah, blah. We all know that stuff. But I guess I'm curious, like safety and trust are two intertwined words.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about your perception.
I think that there was a younger version of myself that left Western Australia to pursue the radio career that always knew that if it didn't work out, I would be fine and mum and dad be there and I could come home. So I felt this trust in my ability to survive. And even when the show Overnight was axed back then.
Overnight?
Overnight. Come to work on a Monday. We don't need you guys tomorrow. Thanks for 7 years at the radio station. Yeah. But even then, I was filled with this bubbling kind of like, oh, this is exciting. Something cool's going to happen for me. I was just had this faith, that something good was self-trust.
Right.
But I think the illness, once that really kicked in a year later, you know, by then I was already wrestling with the fact that I wouldn't become a bio mum. You know, I'd had my early menopause diagnosis. But it was the Addison's thing that really knocked my sense of trust and my ability to dream big in a safe way. That somewhere along the line disappeared, and it's really only come back in the last couple of years.
It's hard when you're capable, your mind wants to do so much, but your body doesn't want to. I mean, I struggle that with all the time. I didn't worry about when I wake up in the morning, you know, is this going to be I need to stay in bed because I can't get rid of bed day, or is it going to be, hey, I have energy to go? And the first thing that my partner asked me every morning when I wake up, because he's usually either I'm in, how do you feel today?
Yeah.
Wow. It's every single morning. How do you feel today? Because he's seen it. Not even comparison to you, but then when we were first dating, some interesting time.
Yeah.
And I was basically unconscious and yet to cold me in the shower. Well, those aren't things that we were traveling in Melbourne for like a day weekend. Well, that turned out to be an interesting weekend. But my point being is it's just this health just takes all your dreams away from you.
That's fine. And you can really resent that.
I did for a while. Yeah, science treated too.
Yeah. And there are definitely still days where it's easier than others. And I say this to my coaching clients, the people I work with, who I ask them to share elements of their story. Not all of it. We don't have to
to be public about everything.
Yeah.
But in order to connect with people, we do need to share, right? And when we're asking you to share in a public way things that have happened to you, you will find that some days it's easier to share that stuff than others. Mm-hmm. Some days the emotions will get the better of you. Mm-hmm. And part of the skill is learning when it's the day to share and when it's not.
Yeah. To trust yourself.
Trust yourself.
Yeah. Can I ask you along that lines, as you mentioned that in regards to motherhood, feeling that it's something that likely you won't be able to.
Yeah.
That must have been a bit hard.
Yeah, it was.
And maybe still is.
Same thing. I think it's all been wrapped up in this journey to getting to a stage where I was like, yeah, I do really want to have my own children. I met my husband and his son when his son Joel was only 8. And so I've been in their lives for 12 years now. So I've been really lucky to have had a step parenting experience. And I'm really happy saying I'm a stepmom and saying it's a step parenting experience. I started out very young and probably a very naive 29-year-old in that arrangement. And I didn't even know back then if I wanted to have my own kids, but certainly seeing how great Ryan is with kids and, you know, he's got like 17, 18, I've lost count, nieces and nephews. We have a great nephew and another one on the way, you know, like this is this huge family of children. And I definitely wanted to have kids with him. And yeah, when I found out that I'd gone through the early menopause and it had been missed, I was immediately devastated, but there was still this sense of, oh, but I can beat this. I can find a way around it. And I just was just this crazy journo researching ways that I can beat it. I'd talk about it on radio and you get a flood of phone calls from people in who want to help me. As soon as you mention infertility, you know, like they'll be just like, oh, did you try this? And I looked into everything. And, you know, and you do, you become kind of obsessed.
Obsessed, yeah.
Yeah. But the time probably came in the last couple of years where I went, okay, well, you know, you're 40 now and it's getting less and less likely that you're going to find this. And we really looked at all the avenues and I just wasn't comfortable. You know, for me, it would be like fly to another country, get a surrogate to carry the child that wasn't even biologically mine. And I kind of went, well, I have actually done some raising of a child that's not biologically mine. And that was rad. Mm-hmm. But there's been this feeling, you know, we talk about my lack of trust, you know, my fears. And it's a weird vibe when it's, there's two people in the house who are blood related and you're not.
Yes.
And so there was never any, I just felt on the outer even of that little arrangement often enough. And I thought, wow, if I go and bring in this baby,
this alien
in my head still doesn't feel like mine, what if I feel that way about them? You know, so had to have some pretty big chats about that and in the end decided that that's not what we're going to do. So now I'm really accepting the fact that I won't be a biological mother and I love my life. I've got an incredible life and I do quite often have to remind myself when I see my girlfriends who have got small kids who's, you know, I'm involved in these kids' lives. I love that. I can't wait to be an auntie with my sister and her partner have kids. I think that's going to be awesome. I love, like I mentioned, all my nieces and nephews and on the other side, on Ryan's family side. So, you know, we've got a pretty good. And when I see my mates who are sort of getting to bed at the end of the night and just going, oh, my God, I forgot that I'm even a woman and I exist, I'm like, well, pretty lucky. You know, there are a lot of plus sides.
It almost sounds to me that all this has made you, I guess, gain perspective.
Yeah.
Not only in that, but in other areas of your life, meaning that if the poop hits the fan in whatever aspect of your life, this has reminded you, well, maybe there's another way to look at it. And I would say there's more than one side of a horse. You can look at life from the nose end or you can look at it from the ass end where all the poop comes out. And it sounds to me that you've been throwing all this poop, but you've made the effort to walk around the horse to see its beauty rather than just where all the stuff comes out.
I like that.
Oh, thank
you. And I do view it that way. I think there is absolutely always. And it's not a case of, oh, look at the sunny side or there's a silver lining. Like you do need to allow yourself space to say, this is crap and I'm going to mm-hmm. sit in that for a while. But there comes a time where if you open yourself up to it, the possibilities are going to come. And for me, it's again, just walking away from that, holding on tight to things and being so rigid and just allowing a bit of flow. And yeah, and maybe it is tapping back into my femininity, you know, and just being able to say, hey, let's yield. Let's yes. actually just
let's
hey.
Yield. I love that. Yeah. It's almost like a form of compassion.
Yeah.
Self-compassion to just yeah. say, you know, I'm not strong enough to deal with this right now. I need to, you know, gain a little bit of energy. It kind of reminds me of, you said this saying that either a Dementor or Super Mario, you know, when it comes to self-compassion exercises. So
doing a Dementor kind of
self-compassion exercise is like Netflix, binging on ice cream, like sleeping, not getting any light. And even after you've rested, you still feel like shit, yeah. right? Because you're actually more punishing yourself yeah. rather than, you know, being, I guess, kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Super Mario self-compassion is when you do the Netflix and you do have the ice cream, but after you do that, you feel recharged and rejuvenated because you have a completely different, similar to the horse, you're looking at it in a different way. You say, "You right now, I actually just want a Netflix and I just want to chill," well, if that's part of your thing, mm-hmm. and eat the ice cream. But it's really how you look at yielding, I think.
Yes.
As a high achiever, is you might look at yielding like, I can't do this because all those opportunities might pass me
yeah.
by. Or I'm getting old. Of course. Or myself so lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at all the hard workers. Everyone's going to think that, you know, I'm yeah. complacent. But where does that get you?
And it leaves you in that place of feeling insecure because you push yourself through. And things invariably don't go well, you know, and in the flip side has been by actually saying, hey, I'm going to take a beat, I'm going to rest and I'm going to look after myself. Then I've always and consistently found that I come back better and stronger.
So we started this out by you saying that you don't trust people, mm-hmm. but it sounds to me that this is in the past and you've actually found beautiful ways to get through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was certainly when I saw that secret, it was the hope in it that it really spoke to me is yeah. that's the person I know I used to be. And I regressed certainly during that really difficult time. But what's come through has been learning to listen to myself, understand myself, know what I need, put myself into places where I'm totally in alignment and really prioritizing that self-compassion, like you say, mm-hmm. and that kindness to myself, just not being so rigid, not being so hard on myself and really removing that negative language. And a lot of that has come through working with particularly women, but not always women, in the Confidence on Camera space. When I sort of went out there with that idea, it became something that really surprised me. I was very nervous about going out there as a Confidence on Camera coach because my work on TV had always been kind of freelance and on the yep. side of radio, but still prolific, a lot of work on TV. Like I sort of always underestimated it from within my industry, but anyone on the outside would go, well, you've been on TV for 20 years. It's like, yes, I have. I've worked on TV shows. But when I started talking to people, what kept coming up was this really negative self-talk, you know, and when we see an image of ourselves on screen and just why do we attack ourselves? Why do we save, I say this on stage, so I may as well say it here, why do we save that level of fucked-uppery for ourselves? You know, like you could see a friend on screen and go, you look gorgeous.
Yeah.
You see your mum, you're like, what are you talking about? You're amazing. Mm. And then we see ourselves on screen, we're like, oh, fat bitch. God, eat less. Would you go for a run? Like the stuff.
It is amazing.
Oh.
The conversations that we have
yeah.
with ourselves.
It's cruel. And what we miss is the incredible value that we bring
yes.
with what's coming out of our mouth. It's not the mouth, what's coming out of it.
Yes. I would say, imagine if the whole world were blind.
Oh, that'd be nice.
How much kinder of a place would we live, yeah. not only in our own heads, but with the world around us?
Yeah.
So what are the, can you give us a few, or maybe even just me, because this is all about me, a few tips, like when, because obviously I'm sure everyone listening here, whether you're, you know, staring at a microphone, a video, or even your boss, you always need more confidence when you're pitching, when you're talking. So, like, where do you start? Like, if someone were to contact you, and we'll obviously put all the details and so forth, they say, you know, I'm just about to do this pitch, or I need to do some videos to promote my company. Where do you start?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that 90% of the work that you do to be confident on camera starts before the camera even rolls.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Right, right, right.
A lot of us will go, right, book in the shoot or book the podcast appearance or book the whatever. I'm going to do the pitch. And they'll think, okay, that makes me accountable. I'll get ready for it. But we never do get ready for it. And we just hope that it's all going to kick in the minute you get there, right? But to feel good about yourself, we've got to start doing some stuff beforehand, right? So first of all, acknowledge that you will need a bit of prep time for the confidence on camera. And then it comes down to value. Like, and I'm talking about not necessarily knowing your values, but what is valuable about you? What is the value that you bring?
How do you determine that?
Well, what do people tell you?
About me?
Yeah, start believing your own press. A boss of mine once said to me, gosh, it's taken me a long time to listen to him. If people continually tell you that you're smart, funny, attractive, hilarious, know so many things about these things that help me, why do we always go, oh, well, that mustn't be true? You know, like if people are giving you compliments, maybe you should start actually listening to them and embodying them, believing them.
But what does value mean to you? This is where I'm struggling. Like when you say you're offering value, like I guess I put myself into my old academic head where I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell you about the study.
Yeah.
But what is value?
Well, the value Dr. Kat brings is helping me understand the study in a language that I speak. Right. And no one else can do that better than you. Right? So there's always something that we have within us that is a superpower. And a lot of us will try and homogenize that. We'll try and kind of be like everyone else. Go, I'm an academic, so I have to look and sound a certain way.
Yeah, that I do very badly.
Yeah, I did a rubbish job of it going off and being a newsreader on the Gold Coast. You know, I get over there and I'm like, I want to be a newsreader, so I'm just going to remove all the things that make Carmen Carmen. But then sure as anything, every time the breakfast show wanted a quick opinion on something, they'd bring my mic up and bugger, out comes real Carmen. And that made all the promos and that got me my big job on the radio show back here in Perth. You know,
interesting.
But the real you is the value. That is the thing that no one else can do. And remember you said it right at the start of this chat, I couldn't help it. I could see myself in you. That's what being human does. It makes another human go, that's just like me. I connect with you. I relate to you. You know, there's a reason why you and I saw each other on stages and went, wow, I like that chick. You know, there's a connectedness.
When you're talking about this and, you know, this authenticity and so forth, for the past couple of years, and I'll just summarize this quickly, for the past couple of years, I sort of went down a completely different rabbit hole, like more corporate, more rigid, more academic, very, for me, it was very sterile.
Yeah.
And now that I'm sort of back to me, I've had so many people say, we're so glad you're back.
Yes.
And we're like, we didn't, you know, we knew that you were in there somewhere, but we didn't know where you went. Mm. And all this is clicking now. It's like, you know. It's exactly that. It's exactly like you say, we spend many, many years trying to be someone else when the most beautiful thing is actually just inside of us. Yeah.
You've been there the whole time, you know, and the trust to let that person out and accept that some people are going to love you and some people aren't, and the people who love you will be enough. Mm-hmm. is a big leap, but you can get there. The other thing I really recommend, if you want to hack, like this is a hack to that, okay?
Okay.
Get a recording of yourself, not of yourself talking into the camera. We need a recording of you doing your thing. So yourself, you've got your podcast, right? Yeah. So you can listen back to an episode of your podcast and you will hear the Dr. Kat magic, all right? But if you're listening right now and you don't have a podcast, maybe you serve as clients in some way, maybe you're a parent, record yourself surreptitiously doing something in your genius zone and you will hear it. You will hear it come through. You'll hear the way other people hear you and the way they see you. As long as it's just something that you're good at.
Yeah.
And I just remember personally being blown away when I first started watching back the coaching calls I was doing with people, thinking, wow, I know a lot more about this stuff than I realized. You know, we really vastly underestimate ourselves every single day.
Why do people overthink
as soon as the button presses for record?
Why is that?
It's a connection to perfection, I believe.
Which I'm very good at.
Yeah, of course it is. You know, high achievers love perfection. We want ducks in a row. We want order, you know, and that's how I feel about life. I'm like, I always feel better if my house is tidy and my washing's being done. Totally. Yeah, we like a bit of order. But the best stuff happens in the chaos.
It's so true, beauty in chaos.
Yeah,
it does. So is it we're overthinking because we're telling ourselves we need to get this right?
Yeah, and we don't trust ourselves.
Back to trust.
Trust.
Hey,
you know, it's so true.
Yeah.
So what would happen? I mean, I guess in our heads, we're saying if we don't get it perfect, then it's not perfect. And then we're not perfect. And if we're not perfect, people won't like us.
Yeah.
And if people don't like us, we're going to feel horrible.
Mm.
And we'll be alone.
Yeah. Or I'll be laughed at. I'll be ridiculed. Or, you know, there'll be this recording of me out there forever that's just embarrassing and awkward, you know. Yeah, look, maybe there will be, but there's a cool impermanence to this content as well. And that existed with television as well back, you know, we're turning over heaps and heaps of content, right? So there are so many things that I wish I didn't say that are up there in the ether. We used to have a little saying in the radio station. My mate Fitzy used to say it. Your mics would go off and you might do the old, oh God, I didn't quite nail that. He goes, it's up the stick. It's gone.
Up so the stick.
That's the broadcasting tower. It's up the stick and it's gone now.
Love that.
Yeah, you can't change it. It's done. And you know what? For the most part, people were driving along in their car, maybe shouting at their kid, looking at the traffic, waiting for the red light to change. They weren't actually listening so closely that they noticed that you fluffed that word.
Yeah.
You know, and the same applies to this digital media. You know, if you're making a reel and it's 30 seconds long and you're watching it over and over and over again thinking, oh my God, I can't put that out of there. I can't do it. Just do it.
Do it.
Just get it out there.
That's right. You got to start somewhere.
You got to start.
There's a great saying, if you're not embarrassed by something that you've done last year, you're not really challenging yourself to do anything important.
It's true.
Yeah. And that Brené Brown, I'm sure you know her, she says FFTs, which is friggin' first time.
Yeah.
And likely more often than not, the reason why you're cringing is because you probably only talked about that for the very first time, or you both, you know, pitched that for the very first time, hence why you screwed up.
Yeah.
But the second time it gets easier and easier.
It does. And it's a really cool place to stay. It's to play when you're getting comfortable with being so uncomfortable. So that's a fun thing, you know, and that's definitely part of my attraction to the media has been the opportunities very regularly to put myself out of that comfort zone and try something new and get a bit stretchy. And now I get that same thrill from, you know, speaking on stages and creating new course content, working with different kinds of clients. So it's, you'll find it no matter where you go. Mm-hmm. It just, it depends how, I suppose.
All right, one more question when it comes to your coaching. Does everyone hate the sound of their own voice, or is it just me?
No, everyone.
Why is that?
Okay, I've decided it's a physiological thing, right? I don't think I've decided. I'm sure there's some boffin out there who did actual research, right? But there's the physical thing. So our ears are located so close to our voice box, we have never actually heard our voice outside of it. Then there's the other thing. There's the recording devices, right? Yeah. So most of us will hear our phone message and go, oh God, hate my voice. It's so foreign. We're not used to hearing our voice that way. Even though it's us, right? So we're walking through life hearing it that little bit different. So there's that. But you do get used to it. So I have spent now 22 years listening to my voice. I know my voice, it's fine to me now. So the more you actually give yourself that shock therapy of listening back to yourself on audio or on camera, you will get used to it. Same as your mannerisms on camera. You're going to get used to them. And there's also the fact that the camera or whatever's recording you throws you off a bit. And so you are a little bit of a different version of yourself.
Yes.
And that happens.
Very true.
Yeah. So we all, and I don't think I've ever met anyone who heard their voice for the first time and loved it.
Loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember speaking with Tracy Bell and the Driven Women, and she was saying that she would go into a voice box, you know, with the decibels or whatever you call it, and they would try to lower your voice as a news reader. Like, why is that? Just because it's more, I guess, comfortable to listen to a lower voice, or?
Yeah, so I was told when I was 18, when told my acting agent that I was getting into radio, I'd auditioned for radio school and got in, and she said, look, if you're going to pursue a radio career, you'll have to lower your voice. So I spent about 10 years walking around trying to deepen my voice every time, everything I did. Everything where I had a bit of an ounce of control, I used that control to deepen my voice as much as I could. And once I got to those shows where you're spending, you know, 3.5 hours a day, 5 days a week speaking, you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, in newsrooms, news directors are still directing young women to lower their voice. But that is probably more to do with the fact that, sadly, news jobs aren't paying what they used to, and women with maturity can't work in those jobs anymore because they can't keep living on that wage. And if there's no, there is a glass ceiling in that industry because there's one news anchor job, you know, and it might be given to a woman, but all those other women, where do they go, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that, because I was once told, this is random fact, but I said, you know, I really wanted an agent to get me out there and so forth. And he said, listen, you're just too old.
Oh, no, you're not.
No, and I thought, it's interesting. But when you look at it that way, when you see all this rising talent and they're fresh and they're willing to do things for nothing.
Yes.
It kind of makes sense in one way.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. There's
you're so hungry.
Always been this fresh, hungry crop of young women and men who want to work in the media, even to this day. And the media, you know, is definitely not the big, bright industry it used to be.
Yeah.
But there's always been someone younger and keener and hotter who was willing to come through and do the thing. So it does mean, yeah, there are just so many young women in the broadcast media right now that, yeah, they are being told to lower their voice. And to my ear, I can hear it.
You can hear them putting on the deep voice that I used to put on.
And now I just don't anymore. And look, the television that I work on is a travel television show, and my role is to be as natural and authentic as I possibly can. You know, I'm forever looking for opportunities, and so are my producers, to throw me off so that I'm not too rehearsed and memorized. We want to see those natural off-the-cuff moments, and slowly but surely I believe women are being accepted for those more than they used to. I think there was a viewing audience, a listening audience, who couldn't stand the shrill sound of a woman's voice. But they are realizing that when you bring value, you know, I'm talking to an audience of people 50 plus who are in their caravans traveling around Western Australia and watching from around Australia with places they should bring their caravan here in WA. You know, if I can tell them something that they care about, it doesn't matter what the sound of the voice that delivered it.
Well, that's given me a lot to think about, and I'm sure the audience as well. And some of my favorite parts were up the stick, which sounds to me like something else, but I love that. I love that. It just means that I've said something and it's now up the stick.
It's gone. Forget about it. You can't change it now. Focus on the next bit.
And also preparedness.
Mm.
You know, sometimes I just think, oh God, why didn't I get that right? And sometimes you forget that even though you might have said it in different ways, sometimes you still have to take a beat.
Yeah.
Which I love that word, is take a beat, think about it, start to think about the value that you're bringing. Mm. That's the other thing, is thinking about your own value in a different perspective, listening to others and saying like, oh, wow, I didn't think about that way. What were you going
to
say?
Yeah, well, that's an audience-centric way to think. That's what I like to say about that. You know, if you view yourself with the eye of the audience, the person who you're targeting, you'll start to appreciate yourself more. You know, that certainly was my experience. I was viewing myself from within the media industry and comparing myself to every other woman on radio in the city or every other woman in radio in the country and going, well, I don't match up for this, this, and this reason. But when I viewed myself in the from the point of view of a woman in business or a professional who's working out what to do with this digital media, and their background is engineering or accounting, and they're going, my God, my boss wants me to go on podcasts and talk about myself on video, suddenly my experience and value was through the roof. Yes. So when you think about who your audience are and what you can bring to them, it's a lot easier to see the value.
And no matter what, even would you say, even if you're not in business, even if you're mom and you're just, or, you know, you're a partner and you're talking to your husband or partner, you can see it from their point of view.
Yes.
You know,
there's such so a good point. Yeah. Flip it around.
It really, no matter what. And the last thing is trust.
Yeah.
You know, I think we spoke about some interesting things in regards to safety.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, safety, trust and so forth, which was really interesting. And I think for the people listening to think, are you trying to protect yourself? Are you trying to keep yourself safe? Or, you know,
yes,
there was a lot of interesting things there.
There's a risk, isn't there, that if you lean too much towards safety, you might hold back too much and you won't try anything. You won't put yourself out there. That's really not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about feeling safe even when you are leaning into something that's a little bit
risky,
frightening and risky,
right,
and trust that you're going to be okay at the end.
Two more questions. First one is, what is a risky thing that you're just about to do?
I am launching a new thought leadership space for me and tell more of the story that you've just heard. And I'd like to speak on stages about compassionate self-leadership, which is a little bit different to compassionate leadership and different to self-leadership. And so that's something I'm researching, which you know. So that's been a really big thing for me to do. Yeah. And I, for some reason, have had this real fear of marketing a keynote around my little old story, and that's been broken through. So that's definitely something a little bit risky that I'm trying, that's new.
All right, and last thing, what is the best piece of advice you've ever heard?
Oh my God. Best piece of advice I've ever heard. That's a very big question, Kat.
I got to throw you off. Hey.
No, right? You've done it.
I was trying to throw you off.
You've done really well. Okay, hang on. Best piece of advice. Because I was going to say something like time is the new rich. Because that really resonated with me for a while there. So I got a little waylaid by thinking about money too much. I was like, well, time is good. Time is a great thing. It really motivated me to spend the 14 weeks traveling around Western Australia that my husband and I did the year before last. That was pretty cool.
That's, you know, a beautiful one.
Yeah.
Very unexpected, because I think a lot of people don't think about that time is the one thing you can never buy.
No. Yeah.
And it's just going to keep on clocking by unless you actually slow it down and appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, and that really did come from the terrible thing that happened in 2018, but also the pandemic, and just realizing how lucky we are to have our health and to, you know, and we were healing from not becoming bio parents together, and yeah, to just go off and do that thing together with the thought in mind that this time is just as good as any great riches that you could possibly make staying home and working, was a really great, it changed things for us. Yeah.
That is the best answer ever that you didn't even really think about.
Well, that was what popped into my head, but for some reason I self-judged it. I should have trusted myself.
And
told you.
Beautiful. So where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at oncamerawithcarmen, or at my website, carmenbraidwood.com.au. And there are lots of self-paced online courses and things there that you can dive into if you want to learn how to be more confident on camera, or if you want to talk about some modern media training, then, you know, give me a buzz, get in touch.
Perfect. We'll put all those links there. Thank you so much again. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we're going to press like a stop record, and I'm still going to ask some questions as always, but thank you so much. And thank you all for listening, and never forget that every day is your chance to shine. Thanks again for listening.